Hello and welcome to Strategic Leadership. I'm so glad that you've joined us today. We're going to have this great conversation with Shonda Smith, the Director of Park and Recreation at Mobile, Alabama, who has done some amazing work with her organization in really providing the leadership, tuning things up, and making that organization really sing. Before we get into the interview, I always like to talk a little bit about why. Why this channel? Why are we talking about strategy and leadership? And I believe that if your mission is important and what you're doing in the world is critical, then it's very important to use the best knowledge we can bring to the subjects of strategy and leadership so that we can take these organizations and tune them up and achieve even more. So it's important stuff to study so that we can have the impact that we want to have in the world. So without further ado, let me introduce Shonda Smith, a friend of mine who I have always been impressed with what you've done. Shonda, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Paul.
You bet. So you have been in leadership positions in the park and recreation field all over the country, in California, in Louisiana, in Florida, in Alabama, all over, and have, through those experiences, developed a great sense of what organizations need. But we're going to be really focusing on your last few years where you've been the Director of Park and Recreation in Mobile, Alabama, and the transformation that's happened there. So you, in your words, tell us a little bit about what that was like when you walked into that new job in a new place where you didn't know people and what was going on, because that really sets the stage.
Yes, it does. Because I think the other big part is I'm not from Mobile. So I moved here for the job. So in addition to learning my job and learning the people, I needed to learn Mobile as well. And moving around as much as I've done, you learn that you have to know the culture and have an understanding of the people. And that was a big part of it. But here in Mobile, they had three different leaders in the last couple of years. And I had actually forgot about this until I was on another panel. And one of my colleagues mentioned that one of the staff said, oh, I've been here. I was here when she got here. I'll be here when she leaves. That person is no longer here because that person decided that they didn't want to be here with the change. But a lot of it was doing what has always been done, but just really navigating how they wanted to navigate. Although it wasn't right, there was just a lot of rogue people and divisions within Parks and Rec just doing what they wanted to do.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit, 15 years ago, I started this job. So a long time ago. But at that time, there was low morale, a good long time with very little progress, and the momentum just wasn't there. And it sounds very much like the situation that you walked into just a few years ago.
Definitely.
And organizations, lots of organizations can be in this position. And these are really like important lessons for anyone that comes into a new leadership position in an organization of how do you get things going? So what were your first steps in assessing what needed to happen to start things moving in the right direction?
The first thing was actually spending time with the staff. I have learned that it's the perception of the outside, and then it's the reality of the inside. And so, meeting with the leaders as I was coming on, they was like, oh, there's no program, there's no activity, staff don't want to do work. And I was like, so there has to be another side to this story. And so I spent a lot of time meeting with staff separately. I did a lot of what I call skip level manager meetings. So I didn't want supervisors in the room. I was new, so there was nothing that they could really be concerned about telling me, because everyone wanted to tell the new boss, all of their problems and all of the things that they think should happen. And so I really monopolized on that and spent a lot of time just meeting with staff one-on-one in small groups and saying, what do we do? What should we be doing better? If you were me, what would you do? And compiled all of that information and came back. And we spent, and I did also at the same time, I started doing community engagements. And so we had, I still remember this number because it was a push, because we did 19 meetings in a month and a half. And so I went to every community center and every place of trying to meet community members, trying to engage and really trying to hear what is going on and what they felt like we needed to do.
I love the, if you were me, what would you do? Because you know, there's a lot of research that change initiatives in most organizations actually don't work. Because, you know, a new leader comes in and says, here's my 5-point plan that we're going to do. And it doesn't mesh with the group that's there, the values, the history, all of that. And I love that you spent a lot of time listening and asking. That sounded like that was a really important step. And then you did the same thing with the community. So both internal and external.
Yes, at the same time, so that they could know that I really wanted to hear. So it was, as they say, Mobile is a small, big city. Yeah. So it was big. And, you know, when people come to your heads, it's an actual metro city, but it's very small. Everyone knows everyone. Everyone talks. And so it is making sure that you, as you step out right, because it's going to get out ahead of you. So you want the word that, you know, she's meeting with everyone. Like, if you want to meet, this is the time to meet. So it was good timing.
What were the standout things that you heard from staff and then what were the standout things from the community that really like struck you as, oh, we have to address this, you know, directly?
I would say the biggest for me, which was the low-hanging fruit for a small win, was a lot of staff was telling me how they were spending their own money on supplies. But every year I'm looking at the budget and we were giving over $500,000, sometimes $1 million, if not more, back to general fund every year because we were not spending the money. And I was like, well, why are you, I mean, these were people, so this let me know they were dedicated, that they were using their money to buy arts and crafts supplies and things like that because they wanted to see a difference. And so I was like, we have money, we will fix that. Give me a list of the things you want and we will have that ordered. And so that was something, and I was like, do not spend your money anymore. Let's put a list together, let's start doing this. And then I was able to go to the supervisors and say, hey, we have money for supplies, let's buy supplies.
Was that a transparency issue with the budget that staff didn't know that there was budget available for those things?
It was very much a transparency issue. What I also found is that people were in positions that did not understand their budget. And so you could assume people like, oh, I manage a budget, but they don't look at it. They get it at the beginning of the year. They don't know what they have. And so we now do a monthly check-in on budgets. What do you have? What do you plan to spend? Have you talked with your staff about things you need to order? And so we have been doing that as a result of that. But it was just the transparency. But, you know, constantly people was like, but we don't have any money. We can't do that because we don't have any money. And I was like, stop. We have money. We had to break that. But that was very much the common theme is we don't have any money. So we have to fix that. That was internally. Externally, what I heard a lot of is the request for more programming, but also just the upkeep of the facility. And I remember being in a facility and they was like, this light here been out for, you know, 6 months. And it was a regular bulb. And I'm looking at my supervisors and I was like, why haven't we changed that? And they was like, well, so we have to depend on an outside department, public buildings to do lights, electricity, plumbing. And they were not being responsive. I said, we have petty cash. Yes. Can we go to Walmart and buy a light and just get a ladder and replace that? And they was like, oh, we didn't know we could do that. And I was like, let's replace the light today. And so we bought a bulk of lights and went around and changed that. From that meeting, we created a handyman crew, a 4-man crew that will come and can do the small things and work with public buildings. They will provide us with lights. They will provide us with different things we needed to do so that we can address it and not have to worry about our two poor electricians that is going around trying to do all of the city of Mobile items. We can handle that in-house. So it was little things like, hey, this is a major area. We come out at nighttime and there's no lights. So, you know, that was something that we could very much address.
That's brilliant. It reminds me of the broken window syndrome with issues in any city, that if there's a broken window, then pretty soon there'll be more broken windows. And then pretty soon, like, the crime will just sort of escalate and things will get worse and worse. If you fix that broken window, people say, oh, this is a good place. Let's keep it that way. And you know, works that way with a light bulb. If the light bulb has been out for 4 months, you assume no one cares about the place.
Exactly. It does. And it has a lot to be, like you said, being feeling cared for. So if it's like, I don't, and it got to the point, what I realized is that they stopped being responsive of putting things out there because it wasn't getting fixed. So why would I report that the light is out when no one comes? Why would I report that there's graffiti when they never show up? And so I really put the ownership back on them. And I was like, so can we buy paint and just keep it? And we can go out there immediately and paint this. So like, how do we do these things that show that we love our community center, from our community center? So it was those small wins that made a big difference.
Oh, absolutely. That's awesome. That's fantastic. So let me back up just a hair, because you said there were three directors in just a few years before you got there.
Yes.
So everyone's going to make the assumption that you're going to be there for 6 months or a year or a year and a half and gone.
Yes.
How did you change that perception? Or did you?
It was time. It's funny. So at this time of the year, I guess I have to highlight that this is Mardi Gras season. But with COVID, there is no Mardi Gras happening. And this is the hometown and birthplace of Mardi Gras. Most people don't know that because they think of New Orleans. And I didn't know that when I came here either. But so I started here in January of 2019. And after, so we start doing the internal and external meetings in March and April. What let me know how much of a difference that made was in May, I was told by several staff members via text, email, or in person that I cannot leave. So they were like, you know, you can't leave. And I said, well, I really wasn't planning on leaving. They was like, no, you cannot leave. There's stuff that we have to do. And I have heard that constantly. I think the other part of it came this time last year is when I bought a house. So I bought a house here, and we do two all staff meetings every year. So I get with the staff, everyone together, and we talk about what's been happening in the department, you know, what's coming up. And then we do a thing that's called Word on the Street, where we address rumors so we can actually say what is happening. And I shared with them, I said, I have lived over five or six places in my lifetime, and I've never bought a house. And I said, but I've come here to Mobile and been here a year and bought a house. I said, so if that doesn't let you know that I'm here for long term, I want you to know that that is a real thing. Like, I am here until I can't be here. And I said, my goal is this is where I want to be. And so that just really made a lot of people say, okay, like, she is here. But I still get threats that I am not allowed to leave and that they're watching me. But they have really taken me in as family. I check in. The personable relationships mean a lot. Taking the time to stop and speak with them. How's your mom doing? How's your grandmother? Especially during this time with COVID. When any staff member got COVID, I tried to make my best attempt to call all of them. How are you doing? Are you taking your vitamin C? You have zinc? Do you need anything? Are family members okay? So that really resonated a lot with the staff, because it wasn't that just I'm here, but I'm here and I care.
Why don't you share a little bit about writing cards to staff? Because I that's a great, great story.
Yes. So one of the things that I noticed when I first started is I just felt like they were neglected. Like, no one had ever really put an effort for them. And so I was really trying to come up with different strategies of how can I let them know I care, but also just who I am naturally. And so I started doing birthday cards. So I would buy bulks of birthday cards and I would write personal birthday. Like, I wanted everyone's birthday. So I had a list, and every month I would sit there and write the cards. And I was like, I just don't want to do cards. I want to do something else. So I started doing Starbucks gift cards. $10 Starbucks gift cards went into every card. And I had a lady show up at the office and give me the biggest hug and tears. And she said, I've been working here for over 5 years and no one has ever even said happy birthday. And to get a card and a $10 gift card was something that I would have ever expected. What I also realized is that they had never really met previous directors because they didn't go out. And so the other thing that I would try to do, and this was the harder part, was trying to get out and hand deliver the gift cards, to them. So that they could know who I am, but also that I can have that relationship with knowing who they were as well. Because, you know, and I'm pretty sure, Paul, you probably have double the staff I have. And so names was important to them because they would come up and say, what's my name? And I was like, I'm going to get it. Tell me your name. I was like, I'm going to work on it. I just don't see you as often. So, you know, don't be offended. But that was something that they wanted me to know, that like, you need to know my name. And I was like, okay, I'm going to work on it. But the birthday cards, it was a big thing. I realized that after a year, because I had to complete the year, because, you know, all it took is for one person not to get a gift card. And so after we completed the year of doing that with 250 staff, I was like, this is not something that I can financially maintain every year. So this last year, before COVID hit, we start doing breakfast with the director. And so they would get an invitation to come to breakfast the first Friday, I think it was, of each month to do, and we would do a breakfast with the staff. And that was something that they enjoyed because we would spend about an hour talking and just having a good time. And then COVID happened. So as we start to roll back out of this with smaller numbers, we're thinking about bringing that back again. But that birthday situation is something a lot of people really, really value.
That's amazing. And yeah, COVID has messed up all of those plans and spending as much time with as much of your staff as you'd like to. But you established the base.
Yes.
So another kind of related story to that is the fleece jackets. Tell me about that. Because I think all these things sort of stitch together to bringing this group along and improving the morale and then that improves performance.
Yes, definitely. So we didn't have uniforms at all. I remember when I first was getting ready to take this position, one of my requests was to take me out on a ride along. I want to see everything and show me what I'm getting ready to walk into. And when we walked into community centers, I couldn't tell you the public from the staff at all. I didn't know who worked there and who was there to participate. And so as we went through the strategic plan and we went through what uniforms should look like, and again, I actually let the staff do that. We put together an engagement team. They decided the kind of material, what colors, you know, the design, all of that. So we designed uniforms and we distribute. I think it was probably May or June, we distributed the uniforms for the first time. And so I really wanted to do something really nice for staff. And so I was like, it gets cold here. So what happens when they got to put on their own jacket? We're back in the same place we were before. So I said, I want to do jackets. And so we did blue fleece jackets for everyone. And then probably about a month before we was about to roll out, I said, maintenance is going to wear the blue jackets too. And they was like, well, we didn't do jackets for maintenance because they already have jackets. And I was like, no, we have to do jackets for them as well. And so instead of blue, they went with green for the maintenance team. And it's funny you bring this up because when I see them, the smile that comes across my face, because I thought that they would wear the fleece, I don't know, somewhere else, just because, you know, fleece gets dusty and it's really not outside material that you would want to wear out it while you're doing yard work.
Yeah.
And we gave the first group that got it was maintenance. And they was like, we have never gotten anything. Like they get an allotment for uniforms, but it's not the same as getting what all the other staff gets. And so now when I see them out, I was like, you're wearing your fleece jacket. They was like, this is the best thing you ever did. I was like, they was like, we love our fleece jacket. I wear my fleece jacket everywhere. And so it just really caught me off guard. And who I'm hearing it most from is the maintenance. And if you know, maintenance always feel like they're the underdogs, like they're not cared for. And so the fact that they got this fleece with everyone else and that theirs is a little different color, they are very excited about their fleece jacket. So to see how excited they are about it, it brings a smile across my face every time. I was like, okay, we got that one. We won on that one.
You have done so many wonderful things here to build the morale and sense of team, because that's incredible.
But also they wanted to be a part of a team, because one of the other things that they said is, we used to get together for Thanksgiving, but they stopped that. And I was like, okay, so let's bring that back. And so we did last year, we did Thanksgiving and we did a holiday party, and they loved it. And it was something that they planned. And I was like, you let me know how you want to do this. I was like, unfortunately, we can't pay for this for the city, but everyone can contribute and who want to participate. And so these were things that they were actually looking for that was not being provided anymore.
Oh, that's great. So any changes in sort of mission statements or how the mission was conveyed?
So the part of engaging the staff at the early on was to start the process of our strategic planning. So there were 7 mission statements for the department.
Yeah.
And so we needed to drill this down to who we are now and who we wanted to be. And so we spent a lot of time with engaging the staff to come together to create a mission statement. We created a vision statement, and we created core values that they all played a part with. And they can actually all see pieces that they contributed to making that. And we rolled out with that probably about October of last year. We rolled out with a new mission, a new vision, and the core values. And so they were very much a part of that, but also very much believed in it and was a part of that process.
Great. So you had teams of staff that worked on various parts of it?
We have a phenomenal innovation team here that worked us through that process. And where I probably would have told you I wanted to do it in 3 months, it became probably about a 7 to 8 month ordeal. And it was because I thought we could do it in 3 months, involving everyone. And my biggest fight was, I want everyone to touch this. And so even as we were taking the information that we collected in the internal meeting and the external meetings, we had to theme that and synthesize that information. And I wanted staff to be there to see the process that is being put forth to actually make sure that their words are seen and implemented. So they very much was a part of the meetings. You know, we even had to define, so what does recreation mean? What does leisure mean? Because leisure meant different stuff to people. I mean, we spent a whole session, 2-hour session, talking about what is recreation, what is leisure, what do we want parks to mean to people? And so we spent a lot of time just even defining that, because I said, we walk away from here using a word that we all don't have a common language around, then we're not talking about the same thing. So that was a big part of the process. So we really wanted everyone, all the way from maintenance, all the way up until the executive staff, to know when we said recreation and leisure, and when we say facilities, like we went about parks and facilities, and we was like, are all things facilities? So we decided that everything is a facility, a park, a building. When we say facilities, we mean everything. So that we will all understand what we were referring to.
That's incredible. So in mission, vision, values, those are 3 associated things. Was one of them harder than the other?
The mission.
Yeah. Because you had multiple ones you had to combine and figure out, you had to throw out some and pull it together.
Yeah. A lot of it was language, and I realized we were using language. And so we had like 7 mission statements that we put up, and we wanted people to go put tabs, you know, post a note on which one you like the most, which one you don't like, and what don't you like in this? And it was, I'm trying to think if I can remember. It was a particular word that I loved. And I was adamant, I want this word in this statement somewhere. No one knew or understood what that word meant. Like no one could, I think I was the only one who could define it, because I wanted that word and I use it. I can't even think of what it is. And I think it's innovative. I think that was what the word was, because innovative could mean so much stuff. And I was like, I want innovative programming and services and this. And people's like, well, what does that mean? Like, and a lot of people circled, I don't understand what innovative means. And I was like, what? Okay, so I kept trying to like explain it, because I'm trying to get people on my side to understand why I want to use the word innovative. And they was like, yeah, we, Ms. Smith, we hear you, but I just don't see that being, it was dynamic. I correct myself. It wasn't innovative, it was dynamic.
Yeah. Well, you want to be both innovative and dynamic. But yeah, yeah.
And it just was not relating to the word dynamic. And so, you know, I'm laughing because the innovation team was like, yeah, we're gonna have to get rid of that word. And I was like, no, let me try again. So I'm like trying to figure out a way. And so I had to actually concede to say, okay, what else can we use that mean that? And what other words, and how do we still like convey this? And so, you know, it was a lot of things. And I let them know that, you know, it was wanting to be able to see the process, that it's not Shonda that was dictating this, that the fact, because they did not understand and did not agree with the word dynamic, we had to scrap that whole mission statement. And so we went back to the drawing board again, and then we, you know, came up with some others and went back to the staff. So the mission part took way longer than all the other parts.
One of the worst experiences anyone can have is trying to edit something that you want really, really, really short with a whole big group of people. Because then someone says, well, that doesn't explain this thing or that thing. And then you're like, but we need dynamic, and they don't want dynamic. It's so hard.
Everybody wanted to see their piece in there, because, you know, special needs wanted special needs in there. Like, put that word in there. So, yes.
It's one of the toughest things out there. Particularly, you know, when you have an agency like your agency, like our agency, where you do a million and one different things, it would be so much easier if, you know, if you were doing one thing and one thing only, you could write such a clear, concise mission statement about it. But when you do a million things in the community, it's very hard. Yes. I have huge respect for every time I read a really good mission statement. And the test I always say is, does it answer the why question? If it answers the why question, even if it's a little wordy, it works. And if it doesn't, if it's just like a list of things we do, so many mission statements are just, you know, we plan, develop, operate, forget that. None of that stuff matters. Right. Why? Why is what matters there? Yeah.
Yes, it's a lot of work, but we made it.
But, you know, if you don't have a clear mission, vision, values, you can wind up with all different parts of your organization actually moving in opposite directions. They all think they're doing the right thing, and they can be going in opposite paths. So simply getting everyone kind of marching in the same direction, that's half the battle. That, you know, you have marshaled all your resources to achieve something. That's
especially when they all saw themselves as different silos, and although they didn't see themselves under Parks and Rec, you know, golf was golf, tennis was tennis, parks was parks. And it was like, I was like, wait a minute, but we're all under one umbrella. We are Parks and Recreation. So that was also, you know, spending to bring them together.
How do you break down those silos? Because those are, they may not be even, they might be in your organizational chart, they might not, but they are strong in people's minds.
So the first thing I did, it was created a leadership meeting where we meet every other week with all leaderships from all of those areas. And so one, I'm big on owning your work. And what I had to teach is that your work is not just your area. Because by default, when you work for Parks and Recreation, people are going to ask you when some stuff to happen, they want to know, so what's going on with golf? And I saw this on the news, or what's happening in recreation? And I said, and not that you have to speak as if you are the recreation expert, but you should know what your colleagues are doing, but you should also know where you all can collaborate and support each other. And so that weekly meeting, every other week meeting, allowed everyone to be on the same page. But what I realized, and this was just astonishing to me, is that a lot of them had never met each other. And I was like, what do you mean that you've never met the people over in golf? They was like, yeah, we never had a reason to. So I didn't know any of them. I was like, okay, this is so you have people in the same department who have never interacted at all. And so doing that was important, but also we, you know, I'm a believer of icebreakers and, you know, bringing people together. But where I actually can see collaboration, I will push them to like work together. Or there's a strategy that golf, he's, you know, part of leading the Turf Management Association. And so when Parks was having an issue with turf management, I was like, we need to reach out to golf. You know, golf is doing this. This is in-house. We have the resources right here. So those are things that, you know, we didn't think of before.
Wow. So recapping, you've already done 10 years worth of work, which is fantastic. Then you had to take a team that's mobilized, a community that's engaged, a mission, vision, values that's defined, and you have to create a plan. So tell us about the strategic plan, because it's just remarkable what you've already told us about.
So we have, I'm going to call it a supplemental plan. And I say that because when I started, we were actually closing up our master plan, a parks master plan that we had an outside agency come and do as a part of our city map for Mobile project. So there were some pieces that I wanted to have complement all of the information that they had found. And so putting the plan together was really trying to figure out where do we want to go next and what areas we want to work on. And what we realized just from the survey that was done from the systems improvement plan is a lot of people did not know what we had. So there were things that were on the list that was high in numbers of what people want to see. Like it was like, we want to see a walking path. We want more walking paths. And actually every park that had been renovated in the last 3 years had a walking path. But the walking path was a sidewalk. It wasn't like a dirt path. And so they did not see the sidewalk path as a walking path. And I was like, so we have to re-educate and do a lot of that work. But what we realized that a very strong thing that the community wanted to see was health. And so one of our first goals was that we wanted to make sure that people have access to health, but also be aware of the health services and amenities that we had, because we had them, but also we needed to enhance that, you know, especially when you think about the numbers that we have with obesity in the city, you know, in the state of Alabama. It's like, how do we help combat that with the services we have? We just got the AARP FitLot, which is a phenomenal program. And with that, they're actually going to provide training on how to use the equipment. We also wanted to focus on being a resource to the community. As many people that come into our centers, to me, I felt like we should know, and a lot of the staff were adamant, especially like in the senior programming, that how do we serve as a resource to help direct them to places they needed to go to get services. And then we wanted to increase programming, and programming wanting it to be a reflection of what the community needs are. And then our most important one was CAPRA accreditation, which would help tie all of this in together. And we later came back and I added, and we're still working on that one, environmental resiliency, because that's something we haven't really done within the organization. We've had outside organizations who have done this, and like, how do we play a part in being great partners with environmental resiliency?
So before we get into CAPRA, let's stay with health for just a moment. Was there any challenge in sort of the programming side of health versus the more passive side, like you were talking about walking paths? Because often, you know, we think that to do something, you have to have a program. You know, it's got to be on the schedule. You know, at 2 o'clock on Wednesdays, you do this. How did you approach that?
But we're actually still addressing that. So we kicked off a new campaign this year called Discover Your Parks. And so what we are trying to do is encourage people to get out to the parks and walk. I think every park throughout the United States have saw a uptick in people in the facilities. And so what we want to do is like let people know all of the facilities that we had available. So because what you realize is people only know the parks that's in their community or the big park. And so what we start doing is like, let's highlight all these other parks that we have that are beautiful that you can go and walk at and get out and take your family to. But the other things that we had staff would say, hey, come and meet me at the park. And they will start and just lead a group, because what you realize is that we've realized, and there was a lot of the staff that said it takes a lot of confidence to go and walk at the park by yourself. And I was like, what do you mean by that? And they started to just really break that down for me. And I was like, okay. And so they were like, so we want to do this. Like, it's not a program. It'll be random. But we want to randomly just say, hey, we're at Medal of Honor. Come and meet us at Medal of Honor at 8, and we will walk. And we realized just a really nice group of people would show up and do that. And after we did it a couple of times, staff was like, we don't even need to be there no more, because now they've created their own community of walkers, and now we can go somewhere else. And so that was actually something that the staff came up with and realized that you could still social distance and get out, but it gave people the confidence to show up and meet other people to get out and walk at the park.
Well, and particularly during the pandemic, you know, everyone is a little more anxious about being indoors versus outdoors. Outdoors is where it's at right now.
Completely.
I just read an article that came out in the Wall Street Journal that was about all the new research that's going on about the health benefits of being outside. And it says 2 hours outside is the new 10,000 steps. It's the new hot thing, which is great.
It makes a lot of sense. And it's trying to keep up with it, because now people are outside and seeing things. And actually it's good, because now they're saying, oh, it would be nice if we had this too. You know, like, can we get some more benches around here? And so those are things like, now with the uptick of people, we're realizing other amenities that would help complement, you know, them being outside.
So we spent a good bit of time talking about your engagement with staff, but we just touched on your engagement with the community. Did some of this come out of those meetings?
Yes. A lot of them, and in different communities. And so, you know, you go to one community center and they're saying, you know, we want more computer classes and, you know, help me look for work. And then you go to some other community centers and they're saying, you know, we want more youth programs and activities for teens. And so what we try to do is figure out what each community center need is, instead of doing this cookie cutter across the board, spending a lot of time of what do that community center want? What do these individual community centers want? And then what are they responding to, so that they don't all have to, it's not this, you know, blanket catch-all programming is good for everyone, because some of them, they're like, yeah, we didn't ask you for that. they are very vocal. They was like, yeah, we didn't ask you for this class and it's good, but can we have something else? And so we spend a lot of time trying to listen, but also shift as well as we start to build our programmatic partners and our programs that we're looking for.
Yeah, that's amazing. So I know in a previous conversation, we talked a little bit about sort of getting people from different parts of the city to go to other parts of the city and engage in the park and recreational facilities there. Tell me about the motivation for that program and how that's going.
Yes. So we realized that only the people in that community went to that center. And it was really hard to... In some of these areas are low-income areas that have been in the past known for, you know, violence or things like that. And it has not been that currently. And so we have had to spend a lot of time of like reintroducing people to centers. And there was this, I remember when I first started, people was like, oh, you can't do this here because people are not going to come here. And I was like, no, they eventually come. So it's either they're going to want to participate or they just don't come. And so we had one center that we would do everything at because they didn't feel like people would come to these other centers. And so we have intentionally put programming in areas to get people to be drawn to that area. So for this month, for Black History Month, we did a movie series and we're doing four movies, one movie every Friday with a panel. And we are doing it in a Trinity Gardens area, low income, known to be some areas that you got to be mindful of going in that area. But it's a beautiful park. It's been transformed because it's not that much activity going on like what it used to be. And we just finished our second week this last Friday. And everyone that comes over there is like, I did not know this was here. This is beautiful. Like I wouldn't have ever known. We have a beautiful amphitheater out there that has sound system, that has lights. And, you know, people are just like, jaw dropped as they come over there. And they was like, I have to see more of what's going on in the community centers. And so what I have realized, just even being from our former location in New Orleans, if you have good programming, people are going to come. And so it's how do you provide the best programming that they know they can't get it from anywhere else, so it's going to draw them to come there, but also expose them to an area that they wouldn't have ever thought about going to.
So what you've described is just amazing, because we went from talking about how to, you know, build your agency up. Now you're going outside your agency and you're changing your community. You're changing the city and how different parts of the city view each other and interact with each other. And that is a larger societal change that you are implementing, which is remarkable and ambitious and dynamic. So good for you.
It makes a difference because you want people, and two, I think the hard, which makes it not hard for us, is that when a lot of these centers were built, they were built in lower income areas. So there are no community centers in the more wealthier neighborhoods. And so, you know, but they still need the same services. People are looking for nice, fun art, you know, art classes. And we have phenomenal art instructors, you know. So they want to go where they are. And so I was like, so they're going to come here and they're going to come because they are interested in these programs and these classes. And it's like, how do you know that you want to go to the program regardless of caring where it's at? And we are slowly getting there, slowly.
That's an incredible story. So could you have achieved that if you'd not first built the team up?
No.
Yeah. No. I think that's like one of the important lessons from this episode is you build your team, you give them mission and vision, you build them as a unit, and then you can achieve anything. Like nothing can stand in your way once you have everyone moving in the same direction and motivated and engaged. That's what it's about. And you have just done it. Congratulations.
Yeah, that has to be, and it's a good point you bring up, because if they're not ready to receive those participants, we've lost already. And so they had to be trained, but also understand their role in, you know, a lot of people felt the community centers were their home. So that means they can regulate who comes in, who comes out, who's in this space. And so if that was the case, when people came and they didn't feel welcome, they wouldn't come back.
Yeah.
So it was really pretty much showing that, hey, your role is to love everybody that walks through this door, that when they walk in here, they should be trying to figure out how I'm going to get back here for something else, because they had such a good experience when we came. We spent a lot of time talking about, like, the, you know, Chick-fil-A. Like, why do you go to Chick-fil-A? And, you know, everyone talks about Chick-fil-A, like, your service is fast. Everyone is accommodating. They're nice. They're quick. And I was like, so we want to be the Chick-fil-A. And I always use Nordstrom's. I'm a Nordstrom's fan as well. But, like, what make you go to the places that you like to go to? How do we create that here? And so when I use that, a lot of people start naming other stuff. And I was like, so we want to do this. And they claimed and owned that and fixed it through their own process.
Well, speaking of Chick-fil-A, that's your secret sauce right there. So you can have the best facilities, the best programs, but if the customer service isn't there, right, you're not going to be successful. And the customer service can't happen if the members of your team are unmotivated and feel disjointed and low morale and all the rest of that. You have to, you know, they have to be excited to be a team member in order to greet you when you come in the door with that openness and excitement, and everything else is going to make you want to come back.
Yeah. It's going to be sincere, because you know, you could tell when someone is fake excited to see you.
Yeah. Absolutely. You can't really fake that. You could try, but have you done any customer service training in there, or was that just a result of people feeling better about their jobs and what they're doing?
It was. We are actually just now starting to do customer service training. We didn't do it before. It was, like I said, you know, with small resources, like, how do we get this across? And that's what we talked about. We really talked about, like, we spent an hour, I think it was a 2-hour session, and we met with a large group. And I was like, where do you like to shop and why? And people just start talking about, you know, why they like to go to places. I said, what makes you not want to go back to places? And we had a conversation about that. And I said, so how do we do that here? And I gave some examples of when I first started and I walked in the building and how I was approached. And I was like, so I said, if I didn't work here, I wouldn't want to go back there. And I said, so how do we
need a director?
Exactly. And I said, so how do we fix this? Like, what do we need to do to make that change and make that different? And then with the facility supervisors, like, how do you make sure that your staff feel and own that when people walk in, that they are excited and they're directing them where they need to go? And they shared that. And we did a few, secret shoppers. So we had just a few people go. And I mean, here we, you know, it is still somewhat, it is coming where, you know, we have certain rec centers that white people don't go to. And I intentionally would call someone. I was like, I need you to go to this rec center and see how they respond to you coming to that center. And I laugh every time because I would call and I say, well, I already know you've been there. They're like, how do you know? I was like, because I got a text that a white person walked in the door. But they were very welcome. But they was like, but they were so pleasant. They was nice. And they showed me around. They told me about the program. And I had never been there. So they started to see the difference that it makes. And it was almost like a morale boost for them as well to have someone come in who don't normally come in that also praised why they were doing the tour. So we
like show off a little
behind the, yes, they like to show off your home, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, I hope that the listeners like tune in on what's going on here, because we're hearing about one situation that Shonda Smith, you know, transformed the community in Mobile, Alabama. But really the same dynamics could work for any organization that you walk into as a new leader, and you have these various challenges of staff that maybe aren't fully accepting, a community that maybe doesn't fully appreciate the facilities and services. Like, all of these things they're common. You know, they may be higher in one community and lower in another, but they're common things for any new leader. And you figured it out. You figured out what were the steps, what order to do those steps, and have done just a brilliant, brilliant job. I mean, this is textbook. It's so awesome. So as you're thinking about the present and the future, let's talk a little bit about the measurable results that you'd like to achieve. And this is where you could talk about CAPRA and say what CAPRA is for the listeners.
I could breathe because I did my submission on Monday.
Right. Congratulations.
We were in a mad dash, but CAPRA accreditation is a accreditation that looks at 151 best standards of how an organization could run. But I'm going to tell you from my experience here, it also pushed the envelope on how the city should run and what the city should have to support your department. And of those 151 standards, they're broken into 10 different areas, which are planning, admin, HR, programming, evaluation. There are multiple other areas, and it's how do you do your business? And what I loved is that it asks, why do you do this? When do you do it? And then the one that got a lot of people is, who knows that this happens and that this is being done, right? Because you could create a policy and then you put it up somewhere, but no one has ever seen this policy. And so it's like, who knows that this policy exists? What it also does is hold you accountable for putting processes in place to make sure that you are informing staff to be informed about rules that are in place. We spend a lot of time of going back between a policy and a practice. And so they was like, yeah, that's a policy. We have that. And I was like, so where is that written? And the whole room would go quiet. I said, so if it's not written down, it's a practice, which means you can change it at any time according to how you want to change it. And so let's talk about, you know, why this is a policy and if it should be a policy. And a lot of stuff that we was like, yeah, that's not going to be a policy because that's not universal. And so we spent the last 2 years going through this process. My staff would tell you, I probably didn't tell them until almost the end of year one that we was going to do, that we had started accreditation because I very much wanted it to be natural. So we started the process early on from day one. I started accreditation. But when I put it down with the book, you know, their eyes got big and I was like, but we've already done this stuff. And so they just said, oh, we already did this. I was like, yeah, see, we're already halfway through. But to get them a part of understanding the different pieces that changed the organization, from background checks and why we do it, assessing and evaluating our services, but how we work with HR, how do we work with finance, how do we approve budgets, how do we do purchasing? And I will tell you, along the way, a lot of that got changed. Even from the city standpoint, it was an adjustment made because they realized either there was no process created or the process was antiquated and need to be rewritten because no one had really looked at the process or the policy because it's just been there and it's one versus is it still relevant today? And so it was a push. It was a push, especially when you got to get other departments that do not see why they need to make the change.
You've done just such remarkable work in transforming the organization and the community and everything else. And congratulations on achieving CAPRA. That is a remarkable goal. And you've done all this in 2 years?
2 years.
That blows my mind. I can't believe that you could do all of those things in that period of time and do them all so well. Sean, for those that are tuning in, I've known Chanda for a number of years, but honestly, every time we have a conversation, I am more and more and more impressed of what a remarkable accomplishment. I think this is the model for how to come into an organization that needs some tuning and what that can then achieve and the momentum that you can create moving forward. So now you have this fantastic team that you're transforming your community. You have momentum behind you. What's next?
Well, I do want to say what I have found is the power in being able to do the things that I can do is having phenomenal support. I don't think I could have done half of this if the mayor and I were not on the same page. Because it's a hard, you know, battle to fight against staff and the mayor, but very much he has been supportive throughout this process. I would even say city council, because we've had some changes that we've made that, you know, the public was not happy about. But very much early on, they understood that the change that was going to come, and now seeing the benefit of it makes a difference. So I will tell you, the support makes this process way easier.
That's a really important point. So every organization has a governance level. And so you've got your city council and your mayor, and they have to be supportive, or you would not have been able to be the change agent that you were. And you were and are a highly dynamic change agent. So good for the governance structure to support that, recognize it, and just, you know, let you achieve what you are so good at doing.
Yes, it made a big difference. So next step. So we have not acquired CAPRA as of yet. We are doing, we have closed, did our submission. So we're being reviewed to make sure we can go to the next steps. We are not doing live assessment. So it will be virtual assessment. And that happens in April. And so we're still kind of on pins and needles until April. And so I always speak in active language that when we receive our CAPRA accreditation in September in Nashville,
right,
you will be definitely invited to the party, Paul.
I will love to come. Absolutely. And I know that you will achieve that goal and countless other goals going forward. thank you so much for spending some time and having this conversation. And again, I think anyone out there who is stepping into a new organization can learn so, so much from the example that Shonda Smith has provided us here. So finally, I just encourage folks to like, subscribe, comment to this channel because it helps others find this content. And as we started this discussion, finding this content, learning this stuff can help any organization improve, achieve more, make the world a better place, have big goals, and achieve them. Thank you so much, Shonda. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate you having me here.